Okay, Melissa, we are back at it. We did have a 1 week lapse.
Little
Busy
hiatus.
sket little hiatus, such busy schedules, I feel. I say that as I'm sitting here in Aspen, so, but it's busy. Work in the morning, then ski a little bit in the afternoon. And
Love it.
you're away, you've been away, or you've been busy with the kids too.
Yeah, I'm in Bahamas right now, taking a little time for myself. And then on the weekend, I was in Orlando at my daughter's dance competition. So we've been traveling, but that's why it's so great that we do this via Zoom. So we can still connect, even though we're in different
Yeah.
parts of the world. And keep on top of the news. That's what's so nice about, well, what's a good thing and a bad thing about having our news on our phone with us at all times. You can be working no matter where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Much to the de detriment of many companies and many cities and et cetera, but I also think too, different ages and stages of life, allow for different aspects. And I loved going into, by the way, I did love going into work. I think it's a really important thing to do.
Yeah, and a lot more people are going to be going back to work, especially in the US, under the Trump administration,
It
getting people back to
appears.
the office. Did you read that all that thing that came out with the USAID and how they looked at, like, they were looking at like where money was going, and it turned out that in some offices that people haven't been in for years since COVID, and they're still making full lunches for a whole company when only like a few people are in the office, and just the amount of waste that was happening, it's crazy. But
No, I did miss that. I missed that article. Thank God.
okay.
But like what one less thing to drive me crazy, right?
Yeah.
So let's just outline what we're going to talk about today. And we are going to talk a lot about the trade and the tariffs and the latest news, which is Trump talking about reciprocal tariffs. So we'll talk about what that means, what he's calling out on Canada, who's going to be affected, and then also I think it's really important to look inward. I have done radio over the past couple of weeks, and one of the things I bring up is, all the trade barriers we have internally in Canada. So there's a lot of things we can do here. So we're going to talk about that, and also what all of this has been meaning for the markets, what's working, what's not working. And then you asked me to look at activist investors, and we'll talk about that, and also share repurchases and why it's good, what's controversial about it as well. And for you?
Yeah, so I was going to talk about a few recent articles I saw. One was on micro and nanoplastics, and a study finding that the amount they're finding in human brains is about 7 grams, equivalent to the size of the weight of a credit card or a plastic spoon.
Oh.
That's the amount of plastics we have floating around in our brains, and what that means, and why that may be, and what we can do about it. So we'll touch on that. Also talking about erythritol, which is a sweetener in many foods and drinks, and how it's been shown to be associated with increased risk for heart attack and stroke, and why that may be and what we can do about it. More news on the GLP-1 drugs. I know that we were planning on watching the Super Bowl together, and then it just ended up being too much because I was traveling the next day. But some of the ads that came on the Super Bowl, if you were watching it through an American feed, there was one ad that was really controversial by the company Hims and Hers, which sells, it's like a telehealth company that sells compounded GLP-1 drugs. And they basically did an ad showing that, the game is rigged and it's not fair that, the average person can't afford these drugs and there should be compounded options. And we can talk about all of that and what that means
Okay.
to Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk stock. Yeah,
Okay.
to cover.
Okay. You know what? Why don't you start, because the tariffs are depressing.
Sure. Yeah,
I
the
shouldn't
tariffs
say
are.
that. I shouldn't say that. We're in the midst of something, that's for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the next thing is the study on plastics. And the question is it depressing? Does it, what does it mean for our health? And what was crazy is that, so they did this study looking at cadavers, basically dead bodies, and looking at the amount of plastics that they found in their organs, specifically in the brain, kidney, and liver. So normally you would think there'd be more plastics accumulated in filtering organs like the kidney and liver, but that wasn't what they found. They found that the highest amount was actually in the brain, which is a little bit shocking because the brain is very protected by what we call a blood-brain barrier. So it's often hard for things to get in. But these nanoplastics are so small that it seems like they're getting into the blood-brain barrier and then they're staying there and having a hard time getting out. So the question is, first of all, it just sounds alarming that we have that amount of plastics in our brains. That, I mean, the size, the weight of a credit card or a plastic spoon, I mean, it's not all in one clump, it's dispersed throughout the brain. But, you know, the question is, compared to, you know, even 10 years ago, there's 50% more. So the amount that we've, and if you track that over the long term, what does that mean for 10 years from now and 10 years from then? How much plastic, and when are we going to see it tip to start causing real health problems? Right now, we don't really know. It sounds like this isn't good for our health, but there, we don't really have any evidence that linking certain diseases to these plastics. But it was interesting that they found that patients with dementia had 50% more plastics in their brains.
Now,
we don't know if that means that the plastics cause the dementia, or if it's just that people with dementia have a harder time clearing those plastics. But obviously, that's something to look at.
Were there any takeaways then, Melissa? Like, they do these studies, and then it's like, okay, now they're going to do another study. But what's your kind of view of this?
So the way I look at it is, you know, we've seen, and I mean, now with like RFK Jr. getting confirmed and coming in, he's talking about, you know, make America healthy again. And he's talking about, you know, getting certain additives and dyes and things out of the foods and getting away from eating ultra processed foods. But the reality is plastics in our environment may also be contributing to a lot of the food allergies we're seeing, the autoimmune conditions, the increase in chronic diseases. We just don't know that yet. It's a hypothesis. But if it is contributing, you know, the takeaway is, what can we do to reduce our exposure? Obviously, they're going to need more regulations and policy changes on the amount of waste, you know, that, because if you think about it, we consume, we're a culture, we consume so much, and so much more even than 10 or 20 years ago, with fast fashion and iPhones and devices and replacing our devices constantly. And all this plastic goes into landfills and it degrades and it leaches into the groundwater and the soil. And ultimately it ends up in our crops and in our vegetation. And then we consume it. Or it ends up in our air and we breathe it in. So it's not just about a plastic bottle, although, I mean, that's a good place to start in terms of getting rid of it, but it's about changing policies. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, like, why do we even have plastic water bottles? Like, why? Do we need those? Why can't we just have canned water like we have pop?
That's an interesting question.
You know, I was like on an airplane and I was looking at this whole big thing of all the plastic water bottles, and it's like, it's something that they could get rid of. And I mean, we'd feel it for a minute, but the thing is, you can just open your tap and drink water, and tap water has less plastics than bottled water.
That's what I drink. I drink the tap water.
So, you know, so in terms of what we can do, so one place to start is obviously get rid of drinking bottled plastic water. I mean, there is more plastic in a bottled water than there is in tap water, or water in, you know, a glass bottle. So that's one place to start. You know, don't heat up plastics. So when you're heating up food in the microwave, or however you may be heating it up, like, make sure you transfer it onto a plate rather than heat plastic.
But I think too, you know, part of this, and I think about this from an investment perspective as well, which is, you know, a lot of this started with just the desire to have mass consumption. And to buy big and to buy in bulk. And that's been going on for 20 years. And you can look at a company like Costco, and, you know, as great as a company it is, and maybe it really does help people if they can buy in bulk, it saves some money. But then there's always another cost. And I think that this is part of that cost. And so I think of it like, you know, if there's ever going to be any kind of shift, any type of step change shift, or even a glacial shift away from that mass consumption, which we might be getting to, and also the GLPs, of course, help that. Again, what does it mean for these big bulk companies? Do you really want to invest in it in the long term?
Yeah, because if you look at companies like Apple, they want us to constantly turn over our devices and our products, and that leads to more waste. And then if you look at a company I wanted you to look at was, you know, Revolve. When we look at like fast fashion with like Shein and Temu and Revolve, a lot of these materials, I didn't realize this was a source of plastics actually, that when you have synthetic clothing materials and you put it through the wash and dryer, it leaches a ton of plastics. I didn't realize that at all, that we then go and breathe in and take in.
That you didn't realize that there are plastics in our clothes?
Yeah.
There's a lot of plastics.
Washing and drying our clothes, like constantly, you know, it's like our desire to be so clean with the single use plastic water bottles and constantly new clothes, washing and drying them. It's like leaching all these, I don't know, waste.
Yeah.
I think the landfills, I think the amount of dispose, like the amount of things that we consume and dispose of so quickly is just not sustainable for the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And back to the plastics in the brain for ourselves as well. Bit of a, maybe a bit of a tipping point. You know, it's, we had a great day the other day. We took a sleigh ride up to Pine Creek Cookhouse. And I'll send a picture of these huge, you know, huge horses. And it was cold. Anyway, we're sitting there having this fabulous, beautiful lunch. And I was wearing one of those tops that, you know, it's fake suede. So basically rubber on the inside. And I'm like, I wasn't having a hot flash. I was like, I'm wearing rubber. I'm about to die of heat. Yeah. And I always, you know, I always joke, like if I was ever like, you know, because I don't like to fly. And I thought if, you know, if ever I'm in a plane situation, I'm like, and I'm wearing pleather and you know, all the fake clothing. Like you're going up in flames.
Fake food, you know, what about all the plastics that we're replacing our parts with?
Yes. Well, that's another one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, to be continued, let's move on to the tariff situation. And Melissa, I was trying to remember like how much we've actually talked about this. I don't think we've talked about it much yet on, I think maybe just a little bit.
The last time we talked, he was when Trump put in the tariffs and they were in place for like 24 hours. And then that 30 days to get our act together on the border. And
then the next day he pulled it back. Okay. Yeah. So
and put them on China and now it's on steel and aluminum. And so, yeah, we can talk about.
So basically in some ways, you know, I look at it this way. We've known his policies and his belief system forever. And we even knew it from the first term back in 2016. And I just look at it, you know, when you have to look at what Canada has done to itself over the past 9 years. We have not increased our growth. We've let many illegal people into our country. We've seen crime increase, guns increase, drugs legalized. So, and we have our own interprovincial trade barriers here in Canada. Over the past 9 years, there's been hundreds of millions of dollars of LNG products, so liquefied natural gas projects that were not allowed to go through in the Trudeau government. So you had all these huge multinational energy companies leave Canada and decide that we're not going to, there's no point to try to pursue this because there's so many roadblocks, right? Every time we try to make a new facility, we're not allowed to. We could have been the largest LNG exporter, but we haven't been able to build these LNG facilities. So, you know, I think that Canadians really need to look inward and understand that, you know, our current situation economically with the sky high housing prices and inflation and crime increases, 116% increase in gun crimes. That's all a made in Canada problem. I love the fact that people are now saying once again to buy made in Canada. Well, what have we been doing for the past 9 years to prepare us? Number one. And number two, the problems are made in Canada. You know, we only inspect about 1% of the trucks coming across the border. That isn't good enough for the United States. And who can blame them? We do have a fentanyl issue in Canada. And I don't know if you saw, but Mark Carney was out saying that, you know, the United States has a crisis of fentanyl. We have a challenge. I mean, tell that to the 50,000 families that have lost their loved ones. There's about 50,000 deaths that have been occurring. So, you know, I think there's a lot that people can do internally. So that said, you know, we'll see where the tariffs come out. I mean, I personally think it's going to be somewhat of a blanket tariff across most goods.
You think he's going to reinstate the tariffs after the 30 days or not?
I do. I mean, I think that, I mean, from what he's even just said yesterday, so we're filming on Valentine's Day. Oh, that hence your hearts. Just clicked in now. You know, he did talk about outlining a plan for reciprocal tariffs. So that's probably going to hit the EU, South Korea, Japan, and India. And part of that is because, you know, some of these developing countries, they might impose a 10% tariff on the products that they import from the United States, but the United States only only imposes a 3% tariff. So he's going to balance that out.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't see how all these tariffs is good for the economy. I just don't see how it's, you know, I read something interesting on the way here talking about how with China, like the US has such a trade deficit, meaning that, you know, we bring in so many supplies from China and yet China brings less than us. Like, so we're in a trade deficit with them. However, I read another point of view that says, but yet we do so much business in China. So there's so many American companies that go into China, whether it's like KFC or Starbucks or whatever it is, the American company that's open for business in China, and we make money there. So I just feel like all this is mine, that's yours, and
right.
Prices everywhere. I just don't see how that's, now I'm not an economist, I don't, you know, but I just don't see how ultimately anybody wins with
Well,
that.
I think there's a lot of people who would agree with you. But I think what, you know, what we saw last Trump presidency was that it's almost unraveling globalization. And yeah. I think you've actually seen that continue to take place because you've seen these new spheres of influence or spheres of power. You've seen these new alliances, right? Since that's happened, you see China cozying up with Russia. You see these different alliances. You know, you look at some of the BRICS countries. So, you mean Brazil,
China,
Russia,
Mexico,
India.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're seeing these different alliances because maybe we are pulling away from globalization once again. And we'll see how that, to your point, plays out. Is it good? Who's it going to be good for? Somebody always wins, is the reality.
Yeah. I don't know. I think a trade war between China and the US, maybe no one wins.
Well,
but I don't know. Again, to
yeah.
be seen. All I really care about, being, you know, from a selfish point of view, is are things going to get more expensive for me?
And they likely will. And in fact, Deutsche Bank actually had an interesting report out, just talking about if you actually raise the tariffs, the extra cost that would be on the inflation front. Right, inflation right now in the United States is running hotter than, you know, expected or hoped. So I call it at that 3% level. In other words, it's been pretty sticky at that 3% level. So that's pushed out, as we've talked a lot about, the potential for the US Federal Reserve to cut rates because the economy from an inflation perspective is running hot, right? And they don't want to stimulate it more, which would happen if they lowered rates. So now if you add in the effects of tariffs, it has the potential to increase inflation. And it also has the potential to decrease growth. And I'm talking about in Canada and the United States. And that's called stagflation. And that's where things are more expensive, but you're not seeing the growth. And then that's another reason why your dollar doesn't go as far. You don't have as much purchasing power. So it is tenuous times. And I'll say from a market perspective, we'll talk a little bit about the markets later, but you know, it's difficult because I'm not sure where I want to put money to work, which is fine, but I'm not rushing to buy any Canadian stock. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Now, if they get to a really low level, maybe, but it's difficult to, with so much uncertainty.
So much uncertainty, and maybe it's not a bad thing to keep money like cash so that in case there is a correction or a crash or anything, that you can then go shopping at a discount.
Right. You can buy stocks at a discount. I will say that what's interesting though, when you like, look, I like to have some powder dry. So I like to have some cash. But what's interesting is when you look at the Canadian market, which has been performing fine, okay, done well, it's really driven by the gold stocks, which have been outperforming. Gold's been outperforming because in these times of uncertainty, number one, you buy, some people believe in buying gold. And also, if your dollar and your purchasing power continues to get eroded, people tend to buy gold. The other aspect as to why people buy gold, or one thought, is that, you know, in tough times, so for Canada, as an example, you know, we've seen so many increased taxes, right? Pretty much across the board, whether it's carbon tax, property tax in Toronto, as an example. I listened to a really famous investor on a podcast the other day who was talking about taxation is, it can become at a certain level, confiscation. So it's a way to confiscate your assets. Taxing is, right? So you, all the equity that you have in your home, when you continue to have to pay more and more taxes, yeah, and then they print money and your dollar value goes down. They're confiscating your net worth, your wealth.
Yeah.
Your wealth. It's really important. It's one thing to, you know, tax to pay for the roads and the hospitals and education and everything. But when they can't manage the money well enough, which is the situation we're in Canada right now, they'll just tax more and it's confiscating all of our wealth. So that's another long-winded way to say that's one reason why people buy Bitcoin. That's one reason why people buy gold.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny because we talk about from Canada, but in the US, they're talking about the same thing about, you know, not managing their money well either. And that's why this whole Doge thing is, you know, getting them to become more efficient. I mean, Canada, we have that to an even higher level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens with the next election. Mm-hmm. And things change here, but it does seem to be harder and harder and harder in Canada to build wealth.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. And when you said, you know, taxation is confiscation, I'm thinking confiscating Canadians out of the country.
What do you mean?
People don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah, you know? I know.
Why? You know, like, it's so hard. Yeah, it's just, and you notice it even in the US, they have just, even in this competition I was at in Orlando, it just, people seem to be able to hold on to so much more of their wealth, you know, and their earned.
Yeah. And I've lived in both countries and it is a lot easier, but things can change, right? Different leadership can make different changes. And that's, you know, that's where, you know, I'm personally hopeful. So, but the reality too, and this is really important as well for everybody to remember that Parliament is not in session, that we need to recall Parliament back to business. How can we possibly look serious to the United States when Trudeau shut down the government, and which is being challenged right now in court yesterday? And because you can't shut down government if it's actually working, and it's working in the sense that they actually passed four bills prior to shutting it down. So that refutes his argument that government was gridlocked.
Right.
We need to get that back so that we can get back to business and call an election and move forward from there. I think it's difficult to look very serious when our government isn't even in session.
Yeah. Oh, politics.
I know. Well, but the reality is too, and you know, like it's not even politics. It's all these policies that have affected our economy and our markets. And what are we going to do? Right. So there's a lot of uncertainty now. But let's move on to more healthcare items. What's the sweetener? I actually stopped using sweetener. I used to use it.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I've always thought that you're better off to have the real thing and just less of it than try to have, you know, like when all these marketing things come out, like fat-free, carb-free, ketone, you know, keto-friendly, all these things are just a way to get people to feel better about overeating. Because the reality is eat whole foods in portion controlled amounts and keep your treats and sweets. If you're going to have the ice cream, have the real thing, just a smaller portion, as opposed to constantly looking for artificially sweetened goods. So the study that I was alluding to was a new study about erythritol. So erythritol is a sugar alcohol. It's a type of sweetener that tastes sweet, yet it doesn't have any calories because our body doesn't actually digest it. Instead, it just goes into our bloodstream and then we eliminate it through our urine mostly, unlike a lot of the other sweeteners that pass through our gut. So I used to be a big fan of erythritol actually, because I have a hard time digesting some of the other some of the other sweeteners, they cause me a lot of bloating or gas because you're passing them through your intestines. And then the bacteria in your intestines feed in them, and that creates gas. Whereas erythritol doesn't seem to cause the stomach and digestive issues because it's eliminated through urine as opposed to through your bowels. However, turns out that it's not so good for you. Turns out that increases the risk of heart attack and stroke because it seems to activate platelets. Platelets are the part of our blood that leads to clotting. So if you're going to create more blood clots, that's how you could create a heart attack or a stroke.
Wow.
Yeah. So they found that it was significantly increasing blood
but
clots.
Melissa, that's frightening.
It is.
That's
now.
So I think a lot of, like, I would think a lot of young people, right? Like, that's when I probably started using these sweeteners or whatever. You know, to be thin or whatever, and why not use it versus whatever? I'm saying whatever a lot, but it's
true because we were told that it was a healthy alternative, and that sugar is the enemy. So rather than having sugar, it seemed better to have a sweetener. Erythritol, we do produce some of it naturally. It is in some fruit. So we thought, sort of think about it as a natural sweetener, but that's in very small quantities. When we consume it as a sweetener in foods and beverages, it's in a much higher quantity. So it's like anything else. If you're having the odd treat that has it, it's probably not going to do a lot of harm. But if you're constantly consuming these sweetened foods, so I looked up some of the foods that have erythritol.
Mm-hmm.
There was one thing that I used to have quite a bit of is Halo Top. I don't know if you remember that ice cream.
You used to eat it a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to have Halo Top because I thought it tasted pretty good and it was a good alternative to ice cream. But yeah, it has erythritol, vitamin water zero,
G2. No.
Yeah, like a lot of these drinks have it in them. And I don't want to say anything like negative about
I
those.
Know. I know.
It's not that I'm against the product. It's that if you are consuming too much of it and you're having, I don't have ice cream every night, but yet when you look at the alternative, this Halo Top, a lot of people are having, a full carton of it every night.
Sure.
Better off to have the real thing and keep it as a treat once a week, a little bit, as opposed to having these treats every day and looking for, to make them, artificially seem healthier.
That's
And like
so
Quest
interesting.
Bars is another one, like these, I actually don't like Quest bars because I like the nutrition. Like when I look at them, I'm like, oh, they've got protein. They don't have a lot of calories. But even when I eat a Quest bar, it tastes like alcohol to me because it's got much sugar alcohol in it. So anyhow, just something to be mindful of. You don't ever want to think you're making a good choice and then find out later it was actually a bad choice. So like you don't want to be eating if you're having, these protein bars and these artificial beverages and these artificially sweetened ice creams and all this stuff. It's just, it causes you to take pause. And this is, again, when I look at these GLP-1 drugs and I think I'm just really seeing it as the solution for a lot of people because eat good foods, but just eat less of them.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's what these
and
drugs.
The GLP helps you eat less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about this also. So I don't know the Super Bowl, if you were watching an American feed of it or.
I did, but I don't know that that necessarily means I saw
that
commercial.
So there was a commercial on that got a lot of backlash after. It was from a company called Hims and Hers, which is a publicly traded company. It's a telehealth company that sells like medications and I think vitamins and supplements stuff too. You can look it up, some of their products. But they sell compounded GLP-1 drugs. And what that means is when a drug is considered in shortage, okay, when there's a shortage of it, you are allowed to create a compounded version of it, meaning your own version. A pharmacy can custom make their own version. It doesn't have to be the name brand. As soon as the drug is taken off the shortage list, you're no longer allowed legally to do that. So Ozempic has been one of the drugs that has been on the shortage list, and that's allowed companies to make compounded versions of them and sell them. And it's created a huge lawsuit with these big companies that are saying, hey, this is our drug. You're knocking it off. That's not fair, right? Now, Eli Lilly's drug in the U.S., which is tirzepatide or Zepbound, those drugs have not been on the list. So you don't have compounded versions of them as readily, although some pharmacies are still doing it illegally. And it's one of these things. It's like, catch me if you can.
Yeah.
And, they're commercial was basically saying to the public, it's a rigged game. It's not fair. How come only the rich people are allowed to afford these drugs? Everybody should be able to have access to these compounded GLP-1 drugs. And I think they're going after this huge market share, hoping that then the regulations may change. And I read one article that compared it almost to Uber, how at the beginning, you know, they got all these clients and then they changed the whole taxi system, right? And the regulations around that. And so I think these companies are trying to appeal to Trump and RFK Jr. saying, let's make America healthy again. It's not fair that these pharmaceutical companies are making money when it's standing in the way of people getting healthier. They're saying these compounded drugs are made in America. Let's go with American versions. So I don't know what will happen, but I mean, it's pretty hard to catch all these, you know, soon Ozempic's going to be off the short list. So then theoretically, they won't be able to sell these drugs. There'll be lawsuits and we'll see what happens. But
what was the backlash though, Melissa?
So backlash was some senators saying, first of all, that this is a drug company. There's very strict laws with when you're promoting a drug, you have to list all the side effects. Like, I don't know. I couldn't believe, actually, it's the first time I noticed how many of the commercials were drug commercials.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, if you make them stop advertising, who's paying for all that advertising? So, but if you watch a drug commercial, don't you, then it's almost funny to see the list of side effects at the end. Side effects may include. And then they're like trying to distract you, showing pretty pictures of couples hugging. And then they're like, and they're going on and on and on. But with these drugs, you know, they didn't list any of the side effects. They just basically said these drugs are great. It's
oh,
not
interesting.
The government's not, you know, allowing the average person to have access because they're so expensive.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And the stock, apparently, I looked it up, is up like 300%.
Since then?
Well, not since then, I think over the year or something.
Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, well, that would make sense. That would not make sense. That's interesting. Yeah, and when I do see the commercials here in the States, it is unbelievable how many of them are pharmaceuticals. And every time I read the side effects, I'm like, oh my God, I have to turn it on mute. It's disturbing. It's really disturbing.
I know. But I guess the same would be true if they listed the side effect of alcohol. You know, if you watched
a commercial, like someone
drinking like a Coors Light, side effects may include heart disease, cancer, addiction, da, 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 you know?
Yeah, that's what they should do.
Or even a McDonald's commercial, side effects may include.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness. Too much. Moving on, you wanted to know a little bit about activist investing. Why was that on your radar?
Because I saw an article that talked about that term and I had no idea what that meant. And then I think it was in respect to the British Petroleum Company or something. And I was like, what is that? At first I thought activist investing meant that you wanted to put your money behind a cause you believed in, but I don't know. Right. I don't know. So anyhow, I thought
that's
it's something
interesting.
And yeah.
Okay. So activist investing, it's basically when an individual or group purchases a significant amount of one company's stock. And the idea behind it is they want to make some type of change happen, or they want to influence the way the company is proceeding with their businesses or their strategy. So they quietly often accumulate a large percentage of the outstanding shares. Outstanding shares just means the shares that are out there to buy, right? Of a company. So they acquire enough where they, you know, then get in touch with the board of the company, publicly traded companies, and, you know, basically say that we believe that you should be changing your strategy or your board members, or, you know, they might push for cost cutting. They might say you should be selling this company. It shouldn't be a standalone company. They might say you should be out there divesting. If you're a large company with a lot of different businesses, they might say you should be divesting certain businesses because they just don't have synergies with your core competency. Or they might say you're so large, you should be out there acquiring companies. So it's basically, the idea is when this group of people or an individual investor, because there's lots, not lots, there's some very famous hedge fund managers, and I've got a few names to tell you about, have looked at and analyzed these companies and basically said, you know, the stock, if the stock's at $10, if you do these five things, it should be at $20. So it's unlocking value. The whole idea is to unlock value for shareholders. So sometimes you'll, so if you hear, you know, it comes across the tape, so a headline that, you know, hedge fund manager XYZ has just accumulated, you know, a certain percentage of the shares and he's pushing for change at the company, that stock will often pop. So it'll move higher. And then you'll see other people who will come in because they'll say, you know, if he's right, if his analysis is right, and he is so effective with knowing how to manage these board members and going about making change happen, that stock, you know, I'll benefit if I, you know, ride along what he's doing.
That makes sense to me. You know, so it means like someone sees potential in a company so much so that they want to invest a lot of their own money into it and then thinks they could even make it more profitable and better. It's like, what are they seeing in this company? I want to like jump on board with that. Interesting.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So as an example, Carl Icahn, so a famous investor, he back in 2013 basically was pushing for a significant share buyback with Apple. Like he went after Apple and was actually successful. And the reason why he was pushing for a share buyback, which I'll go through what that means, is because Apple's known for having a ton of cash on their balance sheet, but they don't pay a dividend.
Yeah.
So
they're a growth company. They want to invest more of their growth. Yeah.
That's right. So to remind everybody, companies that see growth and growth potential tend not to pay dividends because they take all that cash and they look for other areas to grow into. Right. So, but Carl thought that there's so much, you know, cash sitting there. You need to reward the shareholders. And if you do a share buyback, so share buyback means that you base the company itself. So he pushed Apple to do a share buyback. So the Apple buys some of the shares. They take their cash that's sitting on their balance sheet and they go out to the, they buy stock. So what that does is it increases the earnings per share because you've just decreased the number of shares out there. So if your profit stays the same, you know, the person who is owning the Apple shares basically gets more profit because those earnings are spread over fewer owners.
Huh. So, you know, is that around the time Buffett bought all the Apple?
I'd have to go back and look. This was 2013.
So I think that's when he aggressively started buying apps. I don't know. I remember reading about it, but I remember reading like in one of his like mantras, he says like when he looks to invest in a company, one of the things he looks at is companies that are buying back their stock.
Right.
Competitive advantage. So it sounds like that could have been meeting the criteria.
Yeah. You know, one of the other ways to kind of look at share buybacks is it does show a sign of confidence, right? So even if there's no activist investor and you hear and see a company buying back their shares, it's basically the CEO and the board saying, we see more value in our shares than the market is currently seeing. So it is a sign of confidence.
And isn't the opposite true too? Like if you see them selling off their shares,
if you
stake in their own share. Yeah.
If you like, you know, if you do see, and I used to look at this quite a bit, actually, if you do see top executives selling shares, now that can also be part of estate planning.
Yeah.
So you have to be very mindful of that as well. And sometimes, you know, a lot of it is it's pre-planned, right? So you have to be careful with looking at it that way.
Well, what was I watching? I was watching it was a documentary or what I was watching on WeWork. And one of the big criticisms they had at the time was that whatever that guy's name that was the CEO of WeWork, the dynamic guy, he like unloaded a ton. They don't know how they allowed him to like unload a ton of his stock.
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, things fell and he became, you know, billionaire and didn't fare so well. But
we have seen that happen. And just, you know, it was interesting too. Like you've got another activist investor was Nelson Peltz. So a famous investor back in 2015 and pushing for change at DuPont. And that led to the merger between DuPont and Dow Chemical. So again, that I don't remember what those reasons were for why he wanted that to happen. But again, it could be synergies. It could be we need to be bigger to compete with other behemoths. So there's a lot of different reasons as to why, obviously, you know, very company specific. You've got activist investors pushing for change for different reasons.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's that. Okay. Question, this just came up and we didn't plan on this. We were just out for dinner with some people last night and, you know, one of the people, very athletic and apparently there's a new thing. I don't know if you've seen it. I have not seen it. He takes a whole lemon, including the rind, and crushes it up and drinks it.
Seems very acidic. Why does he do that?
Oh, I didn't get a chance to ask. I'll ask. I guess, but if lemon's supposed to be so good for you, wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, but it's always like I talk about the dose. Dose makes the poison, dose makes the cure. So like too much of a good thing. I don't know. Like I'd be afraid to see his like, you know, he might get an ulcer. Now, I don't know, like eating the whole rind and everything of the lemon, that just seems like very acidic. I feel like a lemon should be more of a garnish rather than a meal.
Interesting.
But I'll look it up. I'll
okay, look
up what his reason for doing that is, or his theory for doing that.
Yeah. I'll ask him.
Why would he eat the whole lemon?
I don't know. Well, if lemon juice is supposed to be good for you.
Yeah, but eating like the rind, it's a lot of fiber too, if you're eating the peel and everything.
Oh, that would be good for you.
Yeah, again, not so
okay.
sure.
Okay. No.
One of those things that I'm like, I don't know. I just garnish.
We have a lot of follow-up items, which is, you know, week after week,
yeah,
right? So we'll do
at.
That one. What about food allergies? I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so this I saw, this is actually a British article. So everybody talks about how America, North America, we're so unhealthy here, and Europe is so much better, and they're so much better. But actually, food allergies are a huge problem in the UK as well. I think it's something like 1 in 40 Americans has a severe food allergy, whereas I think it's 1 in 50 in the UK. So not that different.
Wait,
we have more
wait.
But
1 in what?
1 in 40 Americans has a food allergy, and 1 in 50 in the UK. So a food allergy here, we're not talking about an intolerance, we're talking about actually your immune system involved. When you eat the food, your immune system goes a little haywire. And in some people with a mild food allergy, it can lead to, you know, nausea or vomiting or maybe hives. But in people with a severe food allergy, it can lead to death, cardiac arrest. Your blood pressure drops, your airway closes, and it's a huge problem. And this is something that didn't really exist before 1990. Like, I don't know if you remember, Catherine, like when I went to elementary school, maybe one kid had an allergy,
one.
But it wasn't as common as it is. And now,
Yeah.
You know, we think, oh, are these parents crazy that everybody's so worried about their kids and they have an allergy? But no, the reality is food allergies have become a much bigger problem since 1990. Why is this? I mean, we don't know. Is it more, you know, what's causing this? We don't really know. Is it more of these ultra processed foods? Is that our environment's becoming too clean? Is it that these potentially nanoplastics? Like, we just don't know. But the reality is it's a huge problem. It's a problem for, I mean, obviously, if you have a food allergy, it's so stressful for the family. I mean, every time you get on an airplane, every time you go to a restaurant, every time you travel, you have to be so nervous and so worried and vigilant. And, you know, even if you avoid the food, you don't know what's in the food. It's just, I've seen a lot of families and it causes a lot of stress for them.
I'm sure.
So there have been real advances made in almost leading to a cure for these. So right now, the best thing we have here is immunotherapy, meaning that you expose the person to small little amounts of the allergen to train their immune system to not freak out, essentially, when it sees it. So that way, you know, by giving them small amounts of this food over time, the immune system gets used to it. It's almost like a vaccine, you could think of it as. So that when they're actually confronted with the food, you know, they may still have a reaction, but it may not be as severe. But the problem with immunotherapy is it takes a lot of work, takes a lot of time to go through, and the side effects that people get aren't pleasant as they're going through it. So they now have some drugs that have shown promise as well. So I forget, like, I only know the brand names of the drug because the other names are so hard to say, but Xolair is a medication that's, I think it's used for asthma, that has been shown to help with decreasing the antibodies, that when the immune system reacts, it almost mops up those antibodies so that the immune system doesn't create such an overwhelming response. Then there's another drug called Dupixent, which I've actually prescribed, but I've only used it for patients with severe eczema. And it really helps for those patients. It's just so prohibitively expensive.
Is it?
Oh
Is
my
it?
God. It
Like
is
what?
So expensive, thousands of dollars, like $100,000, I think, for the year. Like, don't quote me on
No.
it. Yeah. So some people have you need to have insurance coverage, basically,
Wow.
or get special coverage. And these drugs aren't yet approved for use with food allergies yet, but hopefully soon, one day, maybe the combination of these types of drugs that work on the immune system plus immunotherapy, it could be life-changing for a lot of people that suffer from these allergies that, you know, is just devastating.
That's amazing. But it's amazing too, the drug costs, right? That's
The drugs
one of
are so expensive. And then it gets you to this whole thing, like, it's not fair. Like, if they have these drugs that can really help, shouldn't people get access? But on the other hand, if the drugs aren't expensive, what's the incentive for the best minds and companies to
Right. To produce
develop
them.
it? I get
Right.
it. I get both sides of it, but you know,
Well, and drug costs tend to come down over time,
generics and
and the generics come in, and you know, the pharmaceutical companies have X number of years before the patent, you know, before the patent cliff, before the patent expires. And so they collect the money for that period, but it's difficult for the people who are waiting for that patent cliff and the generics to come on.
Totally. It's life or death.
Yeah. Melissa, just a couple of follow-ups that we should mention. So the couple of weeks ago, we talked about bond investing. So anybody who wants to learn about bond investing, check that out. Because, you know, to the point of what we're facing right now, which is such uncertainty in terms of the economy in Canada and the markets, that, you know, maybe you do want to buy a bond. Maybe you do just want to have a CD and collect a little bit more interest, you know, versus buying a stock right now. So, but we weren't sure, you know, because bond investing, it, to me, is always really much more on the institutional side versus retail. But, you know, but it has actually come down in terms of the amount that you or I can purchase. So it's you can do $5,000 for a Canadian or a US government bond. So that's okay. Or 1,000 for Canadian corporates. So that means if Bell issues bonds, you know, that's called a corporate bond. So corporates issuing debt, that's one. So you can do that in $1,000 increments, and $25,000 for U.S. corporates. So when U.S. corporations issue, remember, because remember, corporations to raise money, they can issue debt. So bonds, they can also obviously have in the capital markets, stocks and issue stocks. So for corporate bonds in the States, it's $25,000 as your base. If that makes sense.
This might sound, you know, dumb, but I don't care. This is how we learn. When someone says they're buying U.S. treasuries, what does that mean? Does that mean they're buying U.S. government bonds?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, because you'll often hear, you know, Buffett say that, you know, I know he said, you know, I read like some article that says that he says after he passes away, the advice he's going to give to whoever is managing his wife's portfolio is, you know, 90% invest in the S&P 500 and the other 10% in US treasuries.
Huh.
Yeah. And I thought that was interesting.
I love how you always know what Warren Buffett's doing.
I'm kind of like, yeah, I love him. He's like, I really, you know, I just think that it's not even someone older who's been through life, 90 years of life, who's been very successful. That's who you get wisdom from, you know, someone who's a lot. And I even think with Trump, you know, like some people don't like Trump and don't like anything, but the guy's had a lot of life experience. And say what you will about him, you learn. I mean, you would hope you acquire. So I think that there's always something to learn from somebody who's seen a lot, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you know what, Melissa, you know, we should really look at, I haven't looked at it. I mentioned this to you though, in one of our podcasts, that when I was probably only 26, 27, I was looking at buying, Berkshire Hathaway. So Buffett's shares, but the B shares, which were trading at a much lower price point. And I never did it. And, you know, it's never too late. But, and the thing is, if you buy one share, you're invited to go to his conference in Omaha. If you own even just one, if you're, so it's a shareholder meeting.
You have to own one share of the Berkshire, of the $600,000.
No.
Even the smaller one?
I'm sure it can be BRK.B. I'll triple check that. But yeah, so
let's
if you're-
go. Let's do it. Let's go.
Let's buy one and then we'll do a little podcast down in Omaha. So it is in May. We'll have to check the date, but Melissa, I just want to go back for 1 second with the treasury, you know, when you say, so people say they're buying US treasuries. Is that how they say it to you?
Yeah. Buy US treasuries. So it yields almost 5% and, or whatever it is. And so it seems a good place to park money when you're not sure what stocks you want to buy. And that way you can wait and be patient and, you know,
so,
something's attractive to you or the market's in a more attractive position.
So I want to just describe that there's a couple different versions of this. So treasury securities. So this is debt issued by the Treasury, and it's to finance, so the US Treasury, to finance government operations. Okay. So there's T-bills. So T-bills are short terms. So that's they mature in 1 year or less.
Yep.
Okay. And they're all going to have a different price point and a different rate, a different coupon, a different interest payment that they're going to give you. Short term tends to be less than longer term, because longer term there's more risk. We don't know what's going to happen. So you're normally paid more to hold for longer term. Okay. So treasury bill. And you'll see a lot of companies buy treasury bills because it's short term. So they put it in treasury bill. And then if they have cash flow needs, it matures within less than 1 year. Okay. So that's a treasury bill or T-bill. There's treasury notes or T-notes. So that's a medium term. So that's 2 to 10 years. It matures in 2 to 10 years.
Okay.
And then there's treasury bonds. That's over 10 years and up to 30 years.
Yeah, not good.
No. Okay. And then this is interesting. You might like this. There's something called TIPS, which is Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. So these are bonds whose principal is adjusted by changes in the consumer price index. So it moves in conjunction with inflation.
Okay.
So TIPS, so you can buy TIPS too.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just, and they're supposed to be the safest, right? Because it's issued by the US Treasury. So if the US Treasury can't pay their bills, you know.
Well, I just thought it's interesting because when everybody says, you read these articles like, oh, Warren Buffett's holding so much cash. And then, you know, to the layperson, you think, well, why would he do that? Why would he own cash that earns zero? But I don't think what they mean is he's actually holding cash. He's probably owning short-term T-bills.
Sure. I would think so.
Yeah, so that was just like one thing I was sort of.
Okay.
Why don't we wrap on? I don't know if you did any work on it, but you know, I'm currently on a trip with five couples, and all of them love fashion, and we're wearing, you know, different fabulous outfits at night and during the day, and a lot of everybody's talking what they ordered from Revolve, and I order a ton of clothes from Revolve. We've spoken about this before, and it's a stock that I actually looked at a couple years ago and I didn't end up buying, but I'm curious, you know, it just seems like, you know, when you look around you and you say like, what everybody using, you know, everybody's using Google,
right?
Uses Facebook and Uber and Revolve as a woman. I don't know. Curious if you had a chance.
Okay. No, I'll look it up for next time. And I'm just looking at him and her stock.
The ticker.
So this is the stock symbol. If anybody wants to look this up, or you can just type in him and hers stock, but the ticker is HIMS. It trades in the United States. It's been up about on a year to date basis. It's up 150%, but it really, so that's on a year to date basis. So it really hadn't done much prior to that, I must tell you.
Prior to this past year?
Yeah, it was pretty flat. It's really
when did it go public? Like, I don't know how long that company's even been around for.
I don't know, but I'm looking back to about 2020 and it did not do much. So it's really just taken off over the past year.
Because of the GLP-1 drugs. I would think
probably.
That's their whole business.
Yeah.
I would think that's their whole business.
One, the past year, it's been up 536%.
Yeah, because of these drugs, which makes you think, like, if all of a sudden they crack down on it and you can't get the compounded drugs anymore, then that stock will obviously take a huge hit. But are they ever going to be able to crack down on it? Like, it's so hard. They'll just, from what I understand, is, and they also do, I think, probably the hormones as well. So a lot of people getting like testosterone or RT or stuff like that. And I think even if it's not allowed, they shut down and then a new one opens up. Like, there's so much fraud in US.
I'm looking at the Revolve stock right now. It's just on a chart basis. I'll look at it on a fundamental basis. Look on the chart basis, it's okay to me.
Okay,
we'll look at it on a fundamental.
Let's see at a price that we think it would be attractive. How about that?
All right. Okay.
All right.
I'm gonna go skiing. It's tons of powder. I'm still in the water.
Yeah, I think we're going snorkeling in through a cave today. Yesterday, I went to a beach with pigs, and people swam with nurse sharks. I chose not to do the nurse shark swimming.
Is it dangerous?
They say no. They say only if they're provoked. But knowing me, I'd probably.
You would provoke it.
I'd probably be like, what are you doing? It would be bothered by me the next thing you know.
You'd want to have a conversation with it.
Yeah, we did karaoke last night. It was so much fun. I like belted out some songs. We're just having a good time.
So good. When do you guys come home? Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. Just in time for family day.
Exactly. You'd probably be with my mom. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Talk to you later. Okay. Bye.